chapter 10, it's pretty clear here that God's making himself known, that he's bending over backwards to make himself known. First of all, like it says in the beginning of Hebrews, you know, in the past, God spoke to us in different times, in different ways, but now, in these last days, he's spoken to us in his Son. And here's the Son talking about, if anyone's thirsty, come to me and drink. If you're hungry, I'm the bread of life. You know, if you're blind, I'm the light of the world. And these guys are just refusing every bit of it. And these are the religious leaders of the day. These are the teachers. These are the priests. These are the ones that people look to set the example and teach the lesson. How do we draw near to the Lord? You know, how do we follow the Lord? And God's working so hard, I guess, if you can put it that way, to make himself known, to make himself heard, to make himself seen, yet there's none so blind as those who won't see. But what does Jesus do? Does he say, I'm just fed up with you guys. I'm out of here, or you're out of here. You know, John and James were going to call down fire from heaven, at least one occasion, and let's just wipe them out. But no, Jesus just shifts gears. Oh, light of the world, you didn't get that? Okay, I'm the good shepherd. He just teaches the same lesson again in different language. Now, this is an agrarian culture. You know, I mean, you were a sheep herder or a sheep buyer or a sheep shearer or a sheep seller or, you know, in addition to whatever else you might do. I mean, you had sheep for dinner and sheep for lunch, you know, and lamb chops and all that stuff. And what's happening here is that these religious leaders, by refusing to accept Jesus as the Messiah, by being intentionally blind to what should have been so obvious, by refusing to see, they were leading people away from God. And, you know, any spiritual path, any religion, you know, process or practice that doesn't go through Jesus leads away from God. And anyone who would presume to lead God's people but doesn't lead them to Jesus is a false teacher or a false leader. Remember, it's been a while now. Now, this isn't like, you know, do you remember Pete and Gladys? Or this is a little more contemporary than that, but still, you know, it's been a while now. I don't know, maybe not quite 20 years since David Koresh. Remember him? The wacko in Waco? I mean, I don't know much about him. I don't claim to be an expert. But he probably started out at one point in the journey from just, you know, Vernon Howell, which is his real name. He probably started out with good intentions, but somewhere along the line, he acquired a taste for glory. You know, the glory that rightly belongs only to the Lord. And so, even though his real name was Vernon Howell, he changed his name to David Koresh. David, probably after King David. And Koresh, some see that as a translation of Cyrus and a connection to the kind of king and the kind of circumstances, a context in which Cyrus was the king. Others see it relate to another Hebrew word that means the end. And then there's yet another Hebrew word where it has to do with tending, you know, a garden, plowing and tending, that kind of thing. I can't tell you what he was trying to say by using that name, but he changes his name to David Koresh. But see, even that wasn't good enough, so he changed it again to Yahweh Koresh. And I have to ask, does Yahweh really need a last name? You know, but false teachers thrive on glorifying themselves. Now, some of the false teachers of our day, they didn't even start out with good intentions. You know, take L. Ron Hubbard, the founder of the Church in Scientology. Hubbard was a science fiction writer quoted as saying, if you want to make real money, start your own religion. And that's exactly what he did. Scientology is a multi-million dollar enterprise, and it costs each disciple, I put that in quotes, several thousand dollars to achieve a state of what they call clear. You know, and they say that's a state of freedom from the weight of past deeds that hold you back from reaching your full potential. If you want to make real money, though, start your own religion. Some of these modern-day messiahs are just out-and-out liars. They're selling spiritual snake oil to naive and gullible people who have very real desires and a very legitimate need, you know, to want to draw near to God, to find that kind of connection, that, you know, purpose and meaning and all the rest about life that only God, a relationship with God, you know, leads you to. Now, still there are some who may not be liars. I mean, let's just, for the sake of discussion, say that maybe Joseph Smith did have an encounter with an angel named Moroni. Maybe he honestly believed that baptism for the dead and polygamy, all the doctrines of Mormonism, were truly revelations from God. Or maybe he made it all up, put his face in a hat, and let his imagination run wild. Maybe Charles Taze Russell, the founder of the Jehovah's Witnesses, sincerely believed what he taught. Or maybe he was just trying to sell books. I don't know. I do have one theory, though, that I'll share with you briefly. When I was about 18, I was acutely aware of the spiritual vacuum in my own life. And I became a student of the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda, the founder of SRF, Self-Realization Fellowship, an organization that continues to this day, even though Yogananda died a long time ago. Yogananda was born in India. He was raised a Hindu, but later he came to the United States, where he combined, incorporated Christianity into his Hindu beliefs and came up with this kind of hybrid, half Kriya Yoga, half Christianity, or his idea of Christianity. And see, as I look back on that time in my life, and having read the books and studied the lessons every week and did the at least a little bit, you know, of the meditations and things that they were teaching, I came to the conclusion that Yogananda wasn't necessarily, I don't think he was a charlatan. I don't think he was a liar. I don't think he was a con man. I've come to believe that he was just deceived. You know, at one point in his life, he was a spiritual seeker, a lost sheep who followed a false shepherd and some false teachings. I mean, sincerely loving God, sincerely desiring to know God, sincerely desiring to serve God, sincerely desiring to help others establish a personal relationship with God. He sincerely, yet disastrously, led thousands upon thousands down a false path, a path that does not, cannot lead to God because it does not go through Jesus. And such is the case with all spiritual counterfeits. Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life, and no one comes to the Father except through me." Now, I know the critics, you know, well, that's so narrow. You have to believe in me. You know, all the other religions are wrong, and how can you be so arrogant, and how can you be so puffed up with yourself to say that we know the truth, the one way, the only way? But wait a minute. It's open to everybody. How is something that's open to anyone and everyone, from the worst? I mean, if Adolf Hitler had had a moment of clarity and an epiphany, and was suddenly sensitive to the Spirit of God and convicted of his sin, according to the way I understand the Bible, he's just as eligible for forgiveness and salvation as any of us. It's not narrow. It just requires that we go through the one door. More about that idea in a minute. You know, whether these other leaders, whether they're seeking glory for themselves, whether they're intentionally deceiving people just to get their money, or maybe they are themselves victims of deception, those who would lead people any other way are false shepherds. They're spiritual counterfeits. They're spiritual fool's gold. Now, in John chapter 10, Jesus lays out very clearly who the spiritual counterfeits are, how we are to respond to them, and how to know we're on the right path following the good shepherd, the one true shepherd. Now, rather than read the whole thing and then go back to the beginning, I think it would be more efficient to kind of work through this section by section. The first six verses talk about a sheepfold. Here we are in John chapter 10, verse 1. Most assuredly, I say to you. Now remember, this is just, you know, virtually the next breath from where we left off when he said, you guys, you know, if you admitted you were blind, then you'd be able to receive sight. But since you claim to be able to see it all so clearly, you just prove that you don't see anything, that you're blind. Most assuredly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs up some other way, the same as a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. And when he brings out his own sheep, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. Yet they'll by no means follow a stranger, but will flee from him, for they don't know the voice of strangers. And Jesus used this illustration, but they didn't understand the things which he spoke to them. You know, there's none so blind as he who will not see. Now, in order to understand this, we have to have a little background, because as I said a few minutes ago, this is an agrarian culture. These people know exactly what he's talking about. Many of these guys, who knows, maybe they served as shepherds, at least with the family flock when they were little. They grew up around shepherds, with shepherds, around sheep and with sheep, and they know exactly how that whole things work. You know, sheep in these days, although sheep and goats sometimes were eaten, mainly when you had a flock of sheep, it was for the wool. And so you'd have the same sheep for years, maybe for the entire lifespan of the sheep, and just shear them, according to the schedule. Now, because they had this sort of year after year after year, this long-term relationship between the shepherd and the sheep, the shepherd would be able, you know, you come to recognize them. I don't know, some of you guys have cattle or horses and stuff, and, you know, we've got a couple of deer that I recognize. They live at our house. There was one with the kind of stubby horn broke off, this young buck, and a couple of does, and you can tell by this, you know, by the cut on her ear and the scar on her flank, and you know who they are. And so these shepherds, it wasn't just a flock of these white fuzzy things out there. There were individual sheep, and they would name them sometimes. You know, maybe they delivered that sheep, and there was a real connection there. And plus, each shepherd would have kind of a unique language, whether it was, you know, words or inflections, or, you know, my dog knows it. That means come here. Or I have a special whistle for my dog. I have two dogs, so there are two whistles. That's the little one, and what's Kirby's whistle? He never answers, so I stopped using it. Oh, it's Kirby, and then that's Bink, and they come, and the sheep, whether it's a whistle or a clucking sound or a phrase with a certain inflection, you know, my dad, when I was little, we used to go visit my aunt in Portland, and she lived right across the street from this huge park, and so, you know, before we get out of the car, I wouldn't even go in and say hello to the aunt and uncle. I'd just want to go play in the park, and so I'd go over there, and I'd, you know, take off, and I was, I don't know, 7, 8 years old. This is back in the days when you didn't have to worry about somebody snatching your kid, you know, very much. And so, you know, I'd go play, and my dad had this yell. You know, I can still hear it. I can't do it. I never could. But he, because my dad's from Mississippi, and so when it's time to come in for dinner, you know, guys are out in the cotton fields and working, and he'd get out in the front porch and he'd go, "Hey, Ron!" And I could be, you know, 10 miles away, and it's like, and I'd recognize that call. And so these shepherds have that kind of thing with the sheep, and the sheep recognize the call and the tone of his voice and all that, and they come. Now, there with these sheepfolds, there are two different kinds of sheepfolds that are addressed in this passage. What he's referencing here is the sheepfold that would be in the village, you know, and it would be shared by several different flocks, several different shepherds. And it's just a low, maybe a low stone wall. There's not much lumber to build with over there, or, you know, the back in the corner of a hillside or something, kind of a pen type deal. And there would be all these different sheep from different flocks in there overnight or something to keep them safe. And then when the individual shepherds would come and they'd go, or, you know, and the different sheep would follow their shepherd, and the other sheep would go, "What's that? I don't know. I'm just going to sit here," you know, and chew something. So they understand all that. They know how to raise sheep, how the shepherds work, how the sheep folds work and all that. And so, you know, bread of life, you know, what does he mean? You know, the living water, I don't know, light of the world, you know, he just pretty much showed them as clear as you can what he meant by that. But they still, "What are you talking about?" And so let's just break it down to kind of something even the 10-year-olds know. Let's talk about sheep and the sheepfolds. And it's one of those sheepfolds that Jesus is referring to when he talks to the Pharisees here in verse 1. "Most assuredly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs up some other way, the same as a thief and a robber." You know, the sheep are all tucked away in there, and there's a guard, you know, there's a gate, and there's a guy watching over it, and shepherds camped out, I don't know, playing poker or something, telling stories, you know, just doing what shepherds do when they're all there. And if somebody goes around the back, you know, and you kind of hop over the wall and you cut their throat and you throw a couple of sheep over the wall and your buddies are out there waiting and they go off, you know, you got a pair of shoes and a new coat and, you know, meat to eat until, you know, for months if you dry it, you know. So that's the idea, you know, these thieves and robbers, they would sneak in, you know. He who doesn't enter by the door but climbs up some other way, that's a thief and a robber. The shepherd uses the door, verse 2, "But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep." Now he talks about that call. "To him the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep." Remember, there are other sheep there, but he calls his own sheep, and he leads them out. "And when he brings out his own sheep, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice." He calls his sheep. Turn back just a couple of pages to John chapter 6, verse 44. Jesus says, "No one can come to me unless the Father who sent me draws him, and I will raise him up the last day." Well, there's that call, you know. And again, in verse 65, "Therefore I have said to you that no one can come to me unless it has been granted to him by my Father. My sheep hear my voice, they know my voice, and they follow me." He calls his own sheep by name, on Donner, on Blitzen, on, you know, whatever, Sleepy, Grumpy, and well, those are the seven dwarfs. You know, he has names for each one. On Binky, come on, Kirby. Come on, Ralph. You know, come on. He knows their names. He knows your name. He knows my name. He knows my every thought. He calls you by name. And the sheep know his voice. We know his voice. And he leads. And what do? Follow. Ooh, that's a key word for us lately. They follow. He leads and they follow. It's a pretty interesting deal. You know, in World War I, there was an occasion recorded where the Turkish soldiers came across a sheep pen, maybe similar to this, only out in the country or something, and they stole some sheep. You know, they didn't kill them. They like, you know, herded them away, a few sheep, I don't know how many. Well, and, you know, the shepherds come out and they discover that, you know, the head count is missing. And so rather than, you know, call 911 or you know, they just went out and went, run! And guess what? The stolen sheep just came back. You know, they didn't have to go rescue him. They know his voice. They recognize his voice. That he knows their names. Maybe he called them, hey, you know, Ralph, Ralphie, you know, you and Becky, come back, you know. And then they came back. It's a true story. They knew their master's voice. Now, verse 5, it tells how the sheep respond to a stranger's voice. Now, they'll by no means follow a stranger, but will flee from him, for they don't know the voice of strangers. Now, the sheep don't know the voice of the stranger, but, you know, this is another thing, and I don't know, you know, we as God's people are, as one of those songs we sang this morning, are often referred to as sheep. You know, he's the good shepherd, we're the sheep. Well, you know, that's not really a compliment, because sheep are about the dumbest animal on the planet. You know, that's why you have to have a shepherd and a sheepdog and all that stuff, because if a wolf can come and the sheep will just run around in circles and let the wolves catch them, basically. They have no defense. They, you know, they can't fight. They can bite a little bit, but, you know, according to a wolf, you can't do much. And so when the shepherd comes and he'll call his sheep, now it's possible that just because the crowd starts to move, a couple of sheep that really aren't part of that flock might kind of go along. Oh, are we leaving? Yeah, we're leaving. Come on, you better keep up, you know. Elmo, let's go. But then, you know, it doesn't take very long before they might follow the crowd for a little bit, but it doesn't take long for them to figure out that I don't recognize any of these sheep, and I don't know that guy's voice, and that's not our whistle, that's not our call, and that's not my name. And, you know, it doesn't last long, and, you know, they won't follow. They'll by no means follow a stranger. Maybe for a minute, because they're sheep. They're not real smart, but even sheep, you know, figure out that's not our shepherd, and they will come back. Ultimately, they'll run. You know, they'll flee from him. Eventually, even sheep figure it out. And this is where, in verse 6, where Jesus kind of shifts the parable now. Instead of talking about, you know, he's implying, he's referring to details about that sheepfold in the village that they all are intimately familiar with. And now, you know, without explaining himself, he just shifts gears and talks about things that make more sense in the context of one of those sheepfolds that are kind of out in the field, you know, you're miles from town, miles and miles from town, and you're out there in the countryside. And now he talks about, in the first couple of verses here, starting in verse 6, about the door. Well, verse 6 explains why he has to shift gears. He used this illustration, but they didn't understand the things which he spoke to them. There's none so blind as he who will not see. And then he said to them again, it's like it says, okay, let's, you know, it's fourth and inches, but let's back up and punt. You know, let's take another run at this thing, you know, and we'll get the ball here in a couple of downs. Most assuredly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. Now, he's shifting gears because those sheepfolds out in the countryside didn't necessarily have a gate or a doorway. What would happen is the shepherd would be out there. Now, in this case, it's usually just his flock. And he herds them in. It's kind of a communal thing. Whoever's in that pasture shares the sheep pen. But he herds his sheep into the pen. And then he actually would lay down across the door, you know, at night to sleep. He would be the door. You know, it makes that saying, well, you're going to have to go through me, literal. Nobody's getting into these sheep, and the sheep aren't getting out unless you go through me. I am the door of the sheep. So Jesus says, you know, he is the door. All whoever came before me, verse 8, are thieves and robbers. But the sheep didn't hear them. Now remember, he's talking to these religious leaders, primarily the Pharisees. These are men whose minds are trained to take these kinds of, you know, illustrations, these kind of metaphors, and translate them or interpret them spiritually. That's what he expects them to do. Who are the sheep? Who are the thieves and the robbers? You know, they're putting all this together just like in a parable, you know, and they don't want to accept the fact that they're the thieves and they're the robbers. They're the false teachers and the false leaders, and they are actually robbing, killing, and destroying what God is trying to do because their Messiah is standing in front of them, talking to them, probably smiling at them, definitely loving them in spite of their stubborn hearts and their resistance. All who ever came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep didn't hear them. Is he talking about us? Yeah, I think he is. You know, let's get him. Ultimately, they do. But the sheep didn't hear them. It's pretty clear in the New Testament, the Apostle Paul especially makes it clear, that the law was given to lead us to Christ. Now, if the law could have established us in a right relationship with God on its own, without the need for a Savior and an atonement and a propitiation and all those things, then the people would have, you know, who were following them would have arrived there or achieved that same kind of thing. But he says the sheep did not hear them. You can't get there from here kind of thing. You know, he's the door. He's the first way, the last way, the only way. A couple of interesting sort of observations. You know, you think back in the ark. The ark only had one door. It's kind of like a sheep pen. And once they got in there, Noah and his family and all those animals, guess who closed the door? Keep them safe. God. And guess what that kind of pitch, tar-like substance that served as a waterproof coating on the outside of the ark, you know what that's called? That's called the atonement cover. And who's our atonement? Who covers us? Jesus. In a lot of ways, he is the ark. He's the one that keeps us safe. He saved us. But he specifically, he's that door. The tabernacle, whether it's the tabernacle in the desert, you know, established in the book of Exodus, or later on after Solomon builds the temple, and now there's, you know, the stone temple, and they don't have don't use the tent anymore. How many entrances to the temple? Not the temple courts, but the temple itself. One. And if you keep walking through the holy place, the most holy place, ultimately what you come to is a sacrifice, which is called the atonement on the Ark of the Covenant, the atonement cover, Ark of the Covenant. One door, one way in, one way out. The point he's making here to them and to us and to the whole world is that Jesus is the only way to salvation. He's the door to the sheep pen, to the kingdom of God, to the ark, to the temple. You know, he's the not just the gatekeeper, he is the gate. Now in verse 9 it says, I'm the door. If anyone enters by me, he'll be saved, and he'll go in and out and find pasture. That in and out and find pasture, that just speaks of freedom. That's liberty. You know, when you enter by the gate and leave by the gate and come and go by the gate, go out and find pasture. That's liberty. That's freedom. That's what Jesus came to offer those who hear his voice, respond to his voice, and follow him. Now, he's not done yet, not by a long shot. Having described his relationship with his people as a shepherd and as the door, Jesus now, he shifts gears and begins to talk about himself more specifically as that shepherd, you know, not just the gate, but the shepherd. In verse 10, the thief doesn't come except to steal and kill and destroy. I have come, you know, here, my mission is that they may have life, you know, not death, and they may have it more abundantly. I think the language there is super abundantly, you know, overflowing to capacity and beyond, more than you can imagine. Just like, you know, the living water will flow up, you know, will be a spring that comes from your guts, you know, and overflow. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd gives his life for his sheep. Now this, so far, I mean, this is still not as direct a reference as Jesus will make in a little bit about his crucifixion, but this is definitely a reference to it. The good shepherd gives his life for his sheep, and a good shepherd does. A good shepherd will be out there, and the pack of wolves come, and he's got his stick and his whatever, his sling or a pocket full of rocks, and he's going to protect those sheep, you know, down to the last, if he's a real shepherd. But see, there's a different way here. Verse 12, but a hireling, he who is not the shepherd, and again, the Pharisees are going, are we the hirelings? Yeah, I think we are. He's talking about us here. A hireling, one who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. The wolf catches the sheep and scatters them. The hireling flees because he's a hireling and doesn't care about the sheep. You know, it's just a gig. They pay me X amount of shekels to be out here, and there's no way I'm taking on a wolf or a pack of wolves and risking my life. If danger comes, I'm out of here. What's the worst they can do? Fire me? You know, he doesn't really care. They aren't his sheep. But I, verse 14, am the good shepherd and know my sheep and am known by my own. As the Father knows me, even so I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. And other sheep I have, which are not of this fold or of this flock, them also I must bring, and they will hear my voice, and there will be one flock and one shepherd. Now again, hear this with, if we can, with first century Pharisee, you know, Jerusalem, serving at the temple priesthood ears. Other sheep? What other sheep? Because there's only two kinds of sheep, you know, speaking figuratively. There's us, God's chosen people, and everybody else, those dirty, rotten, no good, lousy, stinking, Gentile, goyim, you know, losers that God didn't pick, the guys that are like presto logs for the fire of hell that we warm ourselves by on a cold day in heaven. Other sheep, what are you talking about? I have other sheep which are not of this fold. Them also I must bring, and they will hear my voice, and there will be one flock and one shepherd. Therefore, because of all that, because I lay down my life for all the sheep, this flock and all the other flocks, therefore my Father loves me because I lay down my life, and now here's the clincher, that I may take it up again. Once in a while, a shepherd, maybe if it's the owner of the flock, he might, you know, in defending the flock, he may be hurt or even remotely possible lose his life. But take it up again. This command I received from my Father. Well, there it is. He called God my Father. He's got to go. I mean, we already are trying to kill him. Now, you know, it's just getting worse. Therefore, to put it lightly, there was a division again among the Jews, that is, those religious leaders, because of these sayings. And many of them said, he has a demon and is mad. You know, this guy's out of his mind. He's crazy. Why do you listen to him? And others said, well, these are not the words of one who has a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind? You know, there's a few there that are starting to come around. Wait a minute, there might be something to this, you know. Maybe we're not convinced yet, but let's just don't be so quick to call him a madman and write him away or write him off. The good shepherd comes, his mission, you know, is to save the sheep. The thief takes life. You know, he comes to kill and steal and destroy. Jesus comes to give life. I mean, turn back to John chapter 3. It's been a couple of months since we were there, but right in verse 14 of John chapter 3, as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so must the Son of Man be lifted up, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have eternal life. And here it is, you know, the golden nugget. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, you know, the shepherd of the sheep, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life. For, let me explain that, he says, God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world. Boy, headline for a lot of people. But that the world through him might be saved. He who believes in him is not condemned. But he who does not believe is condemned already, because he has not believed in the name of the only begotten Son of God. His mission isn't to come and condemn people. His mission is to come save people. You know, his mission is to give his life for the sheep, all the sheep, more sheep than these religious leaders, these false teachers, were even willing to consider. Now, the mission of the Lord has always been to give life. You know, we see his mission, we see his surrender. You know, Jesus gave his life. It wasn't taken from him. You know, interesting scene there in the Garden of Gethsemane. And, you know, Jesus says, you guys wait here and pray. And he goes off and by himself and he comes back and they're sawing logs. Can't you guys just pray with me for, you know, for 1 hour? Can't you stay awake? You know, they don't realize this is, we're hours away from the biggest event, you know, ever, give or take a couple days for the resurrection. And you guys are going to take a nap now, you know, and he's over here, is so intense in his prayer that his sweat is flowing as if someone cut him open and he was bleeding. And then finally they come. Here they come. There's the temple police, and then there are some Roman, you know, soldiers to keep an eye on things because you can't let things get out of hand. And Judas, of course, you know, leads them in, and it's the one I kiss on the cheek, and he comes up and gives him, Rabbi, you know, Rabboni, and probably gives him a hug, you know, and then he kind of steps back, you know, get him, that's the guy. And Jesus steps up and says, who are you guys looking for? You know, who are you here for? And they say, Jesus. Now, they're thereby ensuring that the whole lot of them don't get arrested. You know, Jesus, Peter, you know, Matthew, you know, on down the line, you're for Jesus, and Jesus says, that's me. I am. And one of the Gospels tells us that when he said that, here I am, in essence, I am, that the police, the guards, you know, the soldiers were kind of knocked down. I can't explain that, but something about the force, you know, I am, and for some reason their knees got weak and they went down. And then, you know, he knocked them down so he could lift them, you know, get them back up and say, you don't need to take me, is what he's saying. You don't need to come and, you know, grab me or chain me. Now that we've made clear who you're looking for and that I'm him, I willingly give myself. You know, I cooperate. There'll be no resistance. He lays down his life. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down and I take it up again. You know, on the cross, when we get to John 19, Jesus will say, Father, into your hand I commend my spirit. He gave up his spirit. No one took it from him. He surrendered himself. You know, spiritual counterfeits, on the other hand, do not surrender themselves ever. False shepherds are much more concerned with themselves than they are with the sheep. Which, you know, back to our old pal David Koresh, he preferred to take his own life along with the lives of all of his people rather than just face the truth. The good shepherd lays down his life for all of us. That alone was a shock to the Jews. And then the last thing in this last section we have, his mission is surrender. The scope of his sacrifice, and this is big news. This is a big deal to those people, and it should be a big deal, you know, to us. It should mean a lot to us. Verse 16, other sheep I have which are not of this fold, them also I must bring, and they'll hear my voice, and there'll be one flock and one shepherd. Well, it shouldn't have been foreign to them. You know, God promised Abraham that through him there would be a descendant who would be a blessing to all nations, not just Abraham's descendants, but all nations. And now Jesus is kind of, you know, fallen back on that promise. That was the promise. Here I am. This is how it's going to work. It's, you know, he came to Israel first. He was very clear about that. But the idea, telling these religious leaders that there, you know, there's God has made a way to save everyone. Not just Jews, or even just Jews and Gentiles. Not the righteous. You know, it's not the sick who need a or the sick need a doctor. Not the well. It's the sinners that need a savior. And turns out we're all sinners, so that's 100% of us. And they just had to be going, blah, 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 blah. This is just too much. Look at it. There was a division again among them because of these sayings. There, the guys are divided, you know, more ways than Sesame Street or the electric company. He has a demon and he's mad. You know, he's out of his mind. Why listen to him? He says, you know, these are not the words of one who has a demon. These are not the words of a madman. There were a few people in there, apparently in this group, whose hearts weren't completely hardened. And when Jesus spoke the truth of God, even though it was foreign to their thinking or their understanding, something in them started to warm up and resonate. You know, this, I think he might be right. And don't we all go through that? I mean, I guess not everybody. In my own case, I didn't so much reject Christianity as just ignore it, you know, till I was in my late 20s. But then somebody, you know, you're somehow exposed to the truth of God, you know, being presented accurately and rightly. And there's just something, even if it's the last thing you're looking for, there's just something inside you that starts to get warm and starts to resonate and starts to go, you know, this is making a lot of sense. I mean, I never thought of it this way, or this is the last thing I expected, or it goes against what the guru taught me in his book, and it doesn't jive with what, you know, maybe mom and dad were into, or maybe it does. That's even harder to get over sometimes, you know, because they're mom and dad. They can't be right. There's only one shepherd, one true shepherd. There's only one door to that sheepfold by which you go in and out, find pasture and find freedom and liberty. And even though that may sound narrow, you know, there's only one way, it's a way that's open. More than open. It's open to everyone. Everyone is invited. You know, God has just kind of reared back and said, y'all come. And if it makes more sense to you that I'm the bread of life, you know, then that's great. And if maybe, you know, living water, then if that's what it takes to get through to you, light of the world, you know, opening your spiritual eyes so you can see reality as it really is and how you fit into it and what you have to look forward to, depending on the choices you make about either believing God or not. Or maybe this has to be this shepherd. You know, shepherd and the sheep thing. He's calling you. When I'm lifted up, I will draw all men to myself, whether you've been predestined or not. That's a joke for all my Calvinist friends. you know, all men means all men. When, you know, John 3:16, you know, whoever, whosoever will means whosoever will. Anybody, everybody. The invitation stands. There's only one way to reconnect, only one way to have the stain of sin removed so that you can enter into the presence of your Creator. And God has gone to a whole lot of trouble over a long span of time to let this plan play itself out. And you know, it's the first day of 2012, and you know, maybe the Mayans are right. And probably not for the reasons they think, and I don't put much faith in the Mayans, you know, any faith at all, but you know, everything is in place right now. There's not one more historical event or prophetic prediction that must come true before God can do, you know, turn the next page in the book of history. It's all set to go. And man, I want to go. And I want you to go. I want everybody I know to go. I don't want to have to think about the people who just, the light came on and so they closed their eyes. The Lord spoke and they put their fingers in their ears, you know? Today could be your day. Maybe it's the first time that you've surrendered your sin and yourself to the grace of God, or maybe it's the umpteenth time. Maybe it's the umpteenth time today, you know? But today could be your day. And that would be a good thing on a lot of levels, because today could be the day. You know, it's never too late until it's too late. And then it's too late. Don't let it be too late.